Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Good evening, everyone. Okay, we have been, last week we started to study sutta number 118 in the middle length discourses. This is the Anapanasati Sutta. And last time, after the introductory section, we entered into the section, the heart of the sutta, which deals with the practice of mindfulness of breathing. And I dealt with the last, where we left off last time, I explained what are called the first tetra, that is the first group of four stages in mindfulness of breathing. As I explained, in this sutta, the practice of mindfulness of breathing is discussed in terms of, sometimes it's said 16 steps or 16 stages, but I think it's actually better to describe them as 16 aspects, because the way I would interpret these 16 factors or 16 aspects, they're not 16 successive stages, but they look at the practice of mindfulness of breathing from different perspectives. As we will see, these are from the perspectives or frameworks of the different foundations of mindfulness. There is some degree of sequence in the 16 aspects. They're not all present simultaneously, but it's not the case, as I understand it, that one progresses from the first factor mentioned, then to the second, to the third, to the fourth, up to factor 16. And I have to say also that by and large within the Theravada commentarial tradition, the actual method of the Anapanasati Sutta has been largely replaced by the method of practice explained in the Visuddhimagga, the path of purification. So though there are some teachers who still hold to the method explained in the Anapanasati Sutta, but most traditional Theravadan teachers take the Visuddhimagga method as the authoritative method, in which the objective is you use mindfulness of breathing, you focus the area around the nostrils, on the upper lip, focusing there until one obtains the nimitta, that's the visualized or visual image obtained when the mind becomes very fine and subtle. Then when the image becomes very clear and prominent, one leaves off the breath and focuses upon that visualized image, the nimitta, and immerses the mind into the nimitta, and then that becomes access concentration. And when the factors become further strengthened, the factors of concentration, that becomes jhana, or full absorption. And so the different stages mentioned within the Anapanasati Sutta are not really taken much account of. So it doesn't mean that the two methods are incompatible, but just not much attention is given to the actual explanations given in the Satipatthana Sutta. Okay, so let us now just go back to these first four stages, first four aspects. Breathing in long, one understands, I breathe in long. Breathing out long, one understands, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, one understands, I breathe in short. Breathing out short, one understands, I breathe out short. That is really the basic practice, the fundamental practice. This is what you might call, this is the actual exercise in being mindful of the breath. What follows from this is all development out of that basic practice of observing the breath, of being mindful of the breath, coming in, going out, first noting the breath when it's long, coming in, going out. That is the coarse breath in the initial stages. As the breathing settles down, as the mind becomes calmer, more peaceful, the breathing becomes quieter, softer, and so the breath becomes short. The next stage that's mentioned is said to be, I shall breathe in experiencing, literally, sabbakaya patisangvedi asasi samiti sikati. Sabbakaya patisangvedi pasasi samiti sikati. Literally translated, I shall breathe in experiencing the whole body. He trains thus, I shall breathe out experiencing the whole body. According to the explanation of the commentators, what is meant is being aware with each in-breath, being aware of the entire in-breath from the moment of beginning to breathe in through the entire course of the in-breath to the very end of the out-breath, very end of the in-breath. And when breathing out, being aware of the whole out-breath from the moment of beginning the out-breath through the whole course of the out-breath to the very end of the out-breath. But as I said, if one just takes the literal meaning of the words and also the word patisangvedi, which it seems to me doesn't have to do with awareness or following, but experiencing. So it seems to me what it means is actually experiencing the whole body in the course of the in-breath and experiencing the whole body in the course of the out-breath. So it seems to me that what is taking place here is an expanding of the range of the awareness so that one is still focused upon the in-breath and out-breath, but now the awareness is taking in the entire body as one breathes in, as one breathes out. I explained last time that one could correlate this statement with a statement in the description of the first, second, well, all four jhanas, which speak about the meditator in the jhana experiencing the rapture and bliss of the jhana, suffusing or pervading the whole body. Though I don't think one has to see the statement as exclusively describing a jhanic experience. But we could see just as the mind of the meditator is becoming more refined and more sensitive through the attention to the breath, he's becoming more aware of the entire body, even though the attention in mindfulness of breathing should still be directed to the area around the nostrils. And then the fourth step, fourth stage, I shall breathe in tranquilizing the bodily formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out tranquilizing the bodily formation. Here the bodily formation, the kaya sankhara, is, according to certain other suttas, is the in and out breathing itself. And as the attention to the breath, the awareness of the breath, becomes more consistent, more refined. The breathing itself naturally settles down, becomes more peaceful, more tranquil. And so this is not, we don't see this as a deliberate effort to make the breathing more peaceful, more calm, but naturally, as one is following the breath with greater mindfulness, with greater consistency of awareness, the breathing just naturally becomes more tranquil. And one could see perhaps the term bodily formation, though it primarily signifies the in and out breathing, but in Indian physiology, the breath has a wider significance than simply what we call breathing in and breathing out. But the word breath is, in Pali, it's prana, Sanskrit prana. You might know from Indian yoga, pranayama, that the breath is considered to be a force which permeates the entire body. It has channels which suffuse the entire body, extending all the ways from the lungs, all the way through the entire body. So we could see the prana, the body formation, kaya sankara, is pervading the entire body, as having manifestations through the entire body. So as the breath becomes more tranquil, more subtle, then all of the branches, the ramifications of the breath throughout the body also start to become more subtle, more tranquil. Okay, now with paragraph 19, we look at the process of mindfulness of breathing from a new perspective. This is now a perspective of inner experience, rather than looking at it in, you might call, somatic terms, in physical terms, what is taking place in the body. Now one is starting to see what is happening in terms of subjective experience. So he trains thus, I shall breathe in experiencing rapture or joy. He trains thus, I shall breathe out experiencing rapture. Piti patisangvedi asasi samiti sikati. Piti patisangvedi pasasi samiti sikati. And you see, here we have that word again, patisangvedi, that same word that occurs in the previous paragraph in relation to experiencing the whole body. That word, patisangvedi, it's not simply being aware of rapture, but it's experiencing it. And so as the breathing settles down, as the mind becomes more focused upon the object, there arises, and as now the hindrances, the five hindrances to meditation, are being dispersed, scattered, suppressed, driven away, and so now the mind is clearly remaining clearly and consistently upon the object, upon the breath. And as the mind is able to remain fixed upon the breath for long periods of time, there arises naturally a kind of joy, happiness, or what we call piti, comes flooding into the mind. Sudhimagga speaks of different stages of piti. It speaks first of what's called minor rapture, then momentary rapture, then showering rapture, which is rapture felt like a shower falling all over the body, then uplifting rapture, which is almost rapture felt almost so strong as though it's able to lift the body up, and then pervading rapture, which is rapture as though it's pervading the whole body. And that last rapture is the kind of rapture which is able to carry the mind into the first jhana. According to the Suti Magga, this stage of mindfulness of breathing in which one is experiencing rapture is identified with the attainment of the first and second jhanas based on mindfulness of breathing. But I think that is, I would say, it's too narrow an understanding of this statement. I would say that this could be understood in to encompass any experience of rapture that occurs in the course of practicing mindfulness of breathing. But we should say that that rapture does reach its culmination in the first and second jhana. But also I should add that also when practicing insight meditation based on mindfulness of breathing, as one is contemplating even the arising and falling away of phenomena, the arising and breaking up of phenomena while breathing in and out, also rapture will arise. And so it's this experience of rapture through mindfulness of breathing occurs not only in connection with samadhi meditation, but also in connection with vipassana or insight meditation. Okay, the next stage, he trains thus, I shall breathe in experiencing pleasure or happiness or bliss. This is sukha. He trains thus, I shall breathe out experiencing pleasure. This is sukha pati sangvedi. Pasasi samiti sikati, sukha pati sangvedi, pasasi samiti sikati. Okay, at the time that one is experiencing rapture, one is also experiencing sukha, pleasure or happiness. But rapture, maybe it's like in a band. Rapture is like the saxophone. And pleasure or sukha is like the piano. And so in the band, when they're playing together, we usually hear the saxophone playing. And the piano, it's making its contribution in the background. But as long as the saxophone is taking the lead, one doesn't really hear the piano so distinctly. It's just there giving its contribution, maintaining the rhythm, filling in pauses. When the saxophonist pauses to catch his breath, the piano is there filling in lines. So pleasure is there. It's adding its quality to the experience, but it's subdued and in the background. At times, the rapture, though, will subside. The pleasure becomes more prominent. And now, what is this difference between rapture and pleasure? The difference is that rapture, let's begin, pleasure is what we call the feeling tone of the experience. Pleasure, or happiness, bliss, is the pleasant feeling within the experience. Rapture is, how to explain it, it's a joyous quality of the mind, almost a physical experience. So it's a mental formation, but it's much more physical in its nature. And it's, we call rapture, has the aspect of an exhilaration, an exhilarating quality to it, an ecstatic quality, uplifting quality to it, whereas pleasure is a much more quiet, more refined feeling of pleasure, bliss. Even happiness is somewhat off-key. Happiness is more a kind of stable condition of contentment. But this is the actual experience, feeling tone within the experience, the felt sense of pleasure, of bliss. And so, initially, rapture is more prominent, but when the mind becomes more accustomed to the rapture, then rapture will subside, pleasure or bliss will become more prominent, but the two will go together, hand in hand together, into the first jhana. And so, the first jhana is described as having vivekajang piti sukham. It has the rapture and bliss born of seclusion. Seclusion from the five hindrances. In the second jhana, also rapture and pleasure are present together. Samadhijang piti sukham. This is the rapture and pleasure born of concentration. But then in the third jhana, you see, rapture is a coarser state than pleasure. So in the third jhana, the rapture will fall away and pleasure remains as the feeling tone in the third jhana. But in order to experience pleasure as distinct from rapture, it's not necessary to go into the third jhana. But even in the preliminary stages of mindfulness of breathing, one could turn the attention, once one gets accustomed to the rapturous, the mood of rapture, one could turn the attention away from the rapture, let it subside into the background and turn the attention to that feeling of well-being, the feeling of ease, the feeling of just a feeling of pleasure, of satisfaction, of bliss, and that will be the experience of pleasure. According to the commentarial method of explanation, this second phrase breathing in, breathing out, experiencing pleasure. This refers to the third jhana based on mindfulness of breathing. But again, I think that's too narrow in understanding. I take it to refer to any experience of pleasure, bliss that occurs in the course of practicing mindfulness of breathing, whether in the course of developing concentration or in the development of insight. Okay, now the third phrase, third stage, he trains thus, I shall breathe in experiencing the mental formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out experiencing the mental formation. Citta sankhara pati sangvedi asasi samiti sikati. Citta sankhara pati sangvedi pasasi samiti sikati. Okay, first, what is meant here by the mental formation? There must have been an early commentary on this sutta in order to understand it. Because for us now, in order to find out what's meant by the mental formation, we have to go to another sutta, not spoken by the Buddha, but spoken by a bhikkhuni, a nun called Dhammadina. Fortunately, it's in the Majjhima Nikaya, it's number 44. I referred to it last week to get the body formation. She also deals with the mental formation. This is page 399. It's paragraphs 14 and 15. This is her former husband, the lay follower Visakha, asks her, I just take the last question, what is the mental formation? And then she replies, perception and feeling are the mental formation. This is sanya, and feeling is vedana. Then he asks in paragraph 15, why are perception and feeling the mental formation? And she replies very simply at the end of 15, perception and feeling are mental. That is, they are cetasika. These are states bound up with the mind. They're citta-patibaddha. That is why perception and feeling are the mental formation. Okay, so when breathes in and out, experiencing the mental formation, one is breathing in and out, experiencing perception and feeling. But what would be more prominent here between perception and feeling would probably be feeling. So, though the mental formation includes both perception and feeling, I would say that feeling is the more prominent of the two. And so one is now breathing in and out, experiencing the feeling. And in fact, as we'll see later, this section is devoted to contemplation of feelings. But now when one is experiencing pleasure, pleasure is also a feeling. So this raises the question, what is distinctive about experiencing the mental formation rather than simply experiencing pleasure? I would say that in this stage, the mind is becoming more finely focused, the attention is becoming sharper, and so one can focus more consistently on feelings from moment to moment, so that one could observe whatever feeling is occurring from moment to moment in continuous succession, so that one is not just able to attend to the more prominent feeling, for example, pleasure, as in the previous stage, but one is able to attend to the feeling in continuous succession, the feeling occurring on each continuous moment that one is. While one is attending to the breath, breathing in, breathing out, one is also observing the feelings that occur along with each in and out breath. And also, mental formation as referring to feeling will have a wider range simply than experiencing pleasure. Perhaps at this stage, if it's really deep concentration now, painful feelings will have been left behind, but the mental formation can also include the feeling of equanimity, upeka vedana, feeling which is neither pleasant nor painful. That's a more peaceful, more subtler, more peaceful feeling than pleasant feeling. And then the next stage, he trained, there's a typographical error. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the mental formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the mental formation. Pasambayang citta sankarang asasi samiti sikati. Pasambayang citta sankarang pasasi samiti sikati. Hear the word pasambayang, that particular verb, or it's actually a present participle, suggests it's an active present participle, suggesting that one is taking an active role in tranquilizing the feeling and making the feeling more peaceful. But actually, one cannot deliberately make a feeling more peaceful, but just by attending more consistently, ever more consistently to the breath, by making the attention on the breath more softer, more gentler, making it gentler, more finer and finer, the feelings that are present in the mind will naturally, in all of the mental formations, will naturally become more tranquil, more subtle, more refined. And so in this way, it's simply the process of softening the attention on the breath, that enables the mind to become more tranquil and the various factors in the mind to become more tranquil. Okay, I'll ask if there are any questions on this tetrad just pertaining to the meaning of this. I don't want to get into a discussion that will go too far away, because I want to try to finish the other two tetrads today. But if there's any questions, about anything that needs clarification, then please do raise them. Peter?
You're talking about the third step, the expand and encompass the whole body. Maybe this is going to be too detailed, but it takes long to explain, but I don't really understand the difference between focusing on the nostrils, being aware of the whole body. Isn't awareness where the focus is?
No. Awareness can have a wider range than where the focus is. The focus will be on a particular point, but awareness can take in a wider range. There's something called I don't remember the name for it, a particular sense. Okay, the focus is on the breath, but one experiences, one could be experiencing the whole body while the awareness is on the breath at the nostrils. That's the way I... Yes?
I've already thought of feeling is pleasant, unpleasant, neither pleasant nor unpleasant.
Yeah.
Not much gradation, pretty coarse, either pleasant or unpleasant. But when you describe feeling here, it seems to be more, to have more gradation. Talk about softer feelings. Or
softer feelings.
Yes.
The basic tone of feeling is either pleasant, painful, or neutral feeling. Neutral feeling is equanimous feeling, feeling that's neither painful nor pleasant. I spoke about attention being softer, and when the attention becomes softer, then the mental formation, which includes feeling, this feeling and perception, becomes more tranquil. So the feeling becomes more tranquil, but it will be a feeling that is pleasant. In this stage, I don't think there's painful feeling, but I think it will be either pleasant feeling or equanimous feeling. Becomes more tranquil rather than a grosser. They can be in the early stages, say, when the mind becomes concentrated, pleasant feeling, but since the mind is still in a grosser state, that pleasant feeling is more like a powerful bliss. But as the attention becomes softer, more refined, that bliss softens down or quiets down, becomes more tranquil, more a sort of more quiet bliss rather than a heavy, loud, prominent bliss. It's like the saxophone, instead of playing a very loud, fast rock rhythm and blues number, it's now playing a very soft, but gentle, lyrical number. Okay, let us go on into paragraph 20. Okay, he trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the mind. Chitta pati sangvedi asasi samiti sikati. Chitta pati sangvedi pasasi samiti sikati. Okay, now in this paragraph, again, the process of developing mindfulness of breathing has now shifted into a new framework, a different framework. We're now looking at the process from the standpoint of the citta, that is, from the standpoint of the mind. If one takes the sequential view, then one would have to see this passage as something that follows upon tranquilizing the mental formation. But I wouldn't see it that way. And as we go along, I'll explain why. Okay, it seems to me that it's perfectly conceivable to see this stage, when breathes in and out, experiencing the mind, to refer to the way a meditator might be practicing when he is developing the attention on the breath and then periodically observes the mind, turns back and reflects on the mind while focusing on the breath, experiencing the mind to see what is the quality, the dominant quality in the mind. Is the mind distracted or concentrated? If the mind is distracted, what kind of defilements might be in the mind? Since this passage will be correlated with citta-anupassana, with contemplation of mind, one could bring this in relation to the Satipatthana Sutta. He's developing mindfulness of breathing, but also being aware whether the mind is a mind associated with lust or a mind free from lust, a mind associated with ill will or free from ill will, a mind associated with delusion, free from delusion, a mind associated with one of the or another of the five hindrances, or a mind free from the five hindrances. And it will reach its culmination when the meditator experiences the mind as a mind that is free from the hindrances, a mind that is now temporarily free from the influence of lust, hatred, and delusion. Then we come to the next He trains thus, I shall breathe in, gladdening the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, gladdening the mind. Abhi pamodayang chitang asasi samiti sikati. Abhi pamodayang chitang pasasi samiti sikati. And the word, the Pali word used here is interesting. It has important implications for understanding this. I'll write it. Abhi pamodayang. Yeah, the word abhi pamodayang, which is translated here gladdening the mind, that is, we call a causative present participle. Don't worry about those grammatical terms. But from that we get a noun, pamoja, which is translated gladness. And now there's a standard passage that we find in many suttas, or at least several suttas. For example, one example, Let's see, Sutta number 7, I believe. Okay, page 119. Paragraph 8. The Buddha is speaking about a monk who's given up defilements and gains confidence in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, or here in the Buddha. Then we have the passage. He gains gladness connected with the Dhamma when he is glad rapture is born in him. So here we have this gladness, that is Pamoja. And one who is glad, who has this Pamoja, from that rapture, piti arises. Similarly, I think Sutta number 39. No, it comes in the Digha Nikaya version, not in the Majjhima Nikaya version. But anyway, you do get this sequence elsewhere in somewhat different forms, but it comes quite a few times in the Anguttara Nikaya. From gladness, one who gains faith, when one has faith, from faith arises gladness. From gladness arises rapture. From rapture arises tranquility. From tranquility arises happiness, sukha. From happiness arises concentration. Okay, so this is why I would not take this passage on the mind to be following in a sequence from the passage number 19, but to be showing the same, basically the same process from a different angle. Because here, just as in paragraph 19 begins with the arising of rapture, here we seem to be going back even to an earlier stage with infusing the mind with gladness. And gladness is the condition for the arising of rapture. But basically, we could see gladdening the mind is the act of bringing rapture into the mind. And one can't really deliberately bring gladness or rapture into the mind, but just when the mind becomes more and more consistently focused upon the breathing, as the hindrances subside, then this gladness, joy, spontaneously starts arising and flowing into the mind. And then one just has to let the mind settle into the breath, soften, merge with the breath, and this gladness will become more and more pervasive, more and more, will suffuse the mind more and more broadly. Okay, the next stage, the next aspect. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, concentrating the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, concentrating the mind. Okay, it's only at this point, here the words, the Pali is samadhaṁ cittaṁ asasi samiti sikati, samadhaṁ cittaṁ pasasi samiti sikati. Here the word used samadhaṁ is the present participle from which we get the noun samadhi. So it's really at this point now that if you ask what has he been doing up to this point, he simply, you say, being aware of the breath, but there hasn't been really a very deep focusing of the mind on the breath. It's only at this point now where gladness, or you could say joy or rapture, have arisen in the mind, and the mind has now become happy, very blissful, that one is really able to get very deep samadhi, deep concentration. Up to this point, one is, you could say that one is being mindful of the breath, being aware of the breath, but now the mind is really settling on the breath and becoming immersed in the breath. So that you could call it this stage, the mind is entering into the anapanasati samadhi, the concentration arisen from mindfulness of breathing. And then we come to the fourth phase in this particular section. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, liberating the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, liberating the mind. Vimochayang chitang nasasi samiti sikati. Vimochayang chitang pasasi samiti sikati. And if one reads this and takes it at face value, it seems at this point he's liberating the mind from all defilements, getting rid of all the obstacles. And so once he gains liberation, no more point for any further training. But I think I have to agree with the commentary here that this doesn't mean that one is gaining final liberation, ultimate liberation. But rather, what is meant is, as one goes on, one finds subtler and subtler obstacles. And as one comes up to, as one encounters those obstacles, one is able just to release them from the mind simply by becoming aware of them and letting them go. In the initial stages, it's liberating the mind from the five hindrances, from distracting thoughts, as one breathes in, as one breathes out. If, as one is going for deeper concentration, when one comes into the first jhana, to go to the second jhana, one has to liberate the mind from vitakka and vichara, applied and sustained thought. One has to let them go. To go from the second jhana to the third, one has to let go of rapture, piti. To go from the third jhana to the fourth, one has to let go of the pleasant feeling, sukha, till one comes to a state of equanimity. even when developing insight, the insight knowledges, there will arise different, we call them distractions, states of, also states of rapture and bliss arise in the course of developing insight. One has to let those go and just keep the mind fixed on the arising and passing away of phenomena. And so again, one has to liberate the mind from these distractions that are called the imperfections or corruptions of insight. Okay, then I'll go directly into the fourth tetrad. Okay, now my understanding is the first three tetrads are concerned primarily with the process of developing samadhi. Samadhi is concentration, or samatha, tranquility, serenity meditation. They could also be understood as having applications to insight, to vipassana. But the emphasis is on developing samadhi. But with the fourth tetrad, we go purely and entirely into the domain of insight. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating impermanence. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating impermanence. Anicjanupassi asasi samiti sikati. Anicjanupassi pasasi samiti sikati. Okay, now after having reached the desired level of concentration, the meditator will turn the attention away from the simple in and out breathing as a bare object of focus in order to concentrate the mind. And now one will be observing the breath in order to note the changes taking place in the process of breathing. Paying attention to the subtle changes in the rhythm of the breath, the changes between in-breath, out-breath, breaking the breath down into the phases of beginning, middle, end, seeing how each is distinct from the others, seeing how each breath consists of many sections or substages of an in-breath, substages of an out-breath. And as one starts attending to the in and out breathing in this way, one is starting to observe how each subsection of the breath is distinct from every other subsection of the breath. Each one arises, subsists for a moment, and vanishes. Each arises, subsists for a moment, and vanishes. So one is now observing impermanence in the body, the impermanence of rupa. And what is observing this change in the in-breath, change in the out-breath, is the mind and the mental factors, consciousness and its associated factors. And the mind and the associated factors that are observing the changing in-breath, the changing out-breath, are changing along with the changes in the in-breath and out-breath. And so the mind and mental factors are different at each moment of observation from the mind and mental factors at every other moment of observation. And so in this way, based on the discriminating observation, a discriminating attention to the in and out breath, one starts to see impermanence in all five aggregates. Changes in the in and out breath, changes in the rupa, in the rupakanda, the aggregate of form, changes in the mind, the consciousness that's observing that, and the associated mental factors, changes in the mental aggregates. One sees how all of the each stage of breathing arises, subsists, perishes, arises, subsists, perishes. And this is the insight into impermanence. As the observation continues and the concentration, focusing becomes finer, steadier, more consistent, the process of arising and passing away gains momentum, becomes quicker, becomes observed at, we call it, subtler levels of occurrence, until one is observing the arising and passing away occurring at very extremely subtle levels, occurring very rapidly. And as one does so, after some time, the attention to the arising aspect drifts into the background, and what becomes more prominent is the aspect of falling away. This is viraga, fading away. So this is viraganupassi asasi samiti sikati, viraganupassi pasasi samiti sikati. I shall breathe in, contemplating fading away. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating fading away. And as the attention focuses upon the fading away or vanishing of the phenomena, all of the bodily phenomena in the act of breathing, so that as one breathes in, moment after moment, even at microsecond levels, the breath is fading away or vanishing, and all of the mental factors observing the breath also fading away and vanishing. Okay, as one is observing this, the attention is again shifting to a finer and still sharper level of observation, until one is now just observing cessation, the moment of cessation, one moment of cessation, after one moment of cessation, after one moment of cessation. So it's just almost like a continuous string of moments of cessation. It's almost like there's no arising, no persisting. Of course, they are occurring, but the attention is just fixed on cessation, occurring at extremely rapid rate. I call this the subatomic level of cessation. And so this is Nirodhanu pasi asasi samiti sikati. Nirodhanu pasi pasasi samiti sikati. Observing cessation, I shall breathe in, contemplating cessation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating cessation. Then the next refers not so much to a new stage in the object of contemplation, but it's the attitude towards the object of contemplation. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating relinquishment. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating relinquishment. Pati nisaganu pasi asasi samiti sikati. Pati nisaganu pasi pasasi samiti sikati. Here, because one is contemplating this rapid cessation of all the bodily phenomena observed in the breathing, all the mental phenomena that are observing the breathing, and so one is seeing that all of these five aggregates that one has always been clinging to and taking to be I and mine are just this impermanent combination of impermanent factors, always ceasing, breaking up and ceasing. One now starts relinquishing or giving up the attachment and identification with the five aggregates. And the mind is now inclining, leaning towards the ultimate relinquishment, that is Nibbana.
So at this stage, you know, the aggregates aren't actually being, attachment to the aggregates isn't being dropped entirely, but it's just the inclination towards
it. Yeah, I don't, as I understand it, at this, within the 16 stages of mindfulness of breathing, it doesn't yet take the breakthrough to Nibbana. But it takes, within the last tetrad, we could say, all of the stages building up to the breakthrough. Okay, and then just the concluding sentence, the Buddha says, that is how mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, so that it is of great fruit and great benefit. Okay, if there are any questions, then please feel welcome to ask. Dr. Murray?
I'd like to understand better what I do when I contemplate something. Is this a kind of noting? Is it something that I do only when I first sit and meditate, or is it something that I sustain in practice?
Let us see in which, in connection with which particular passage.
Well, he says, he trains thus, and then in quotes, I shall breathe in, experiencing rapture. In all of these sessions, he trains thus, and in quotes, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mind, and so forth. What I do.
Yeah. Actually, what I the way I would understand it, is that the training is actually to keep the mind consistently on the breath. And as one keeps the mind on the breath, one will undergo these different experiences, and one notes these different experiences as one goes through them. Though I would think somebody who gains some degree of accomplishment with mindfulness of breathing could probably deliberately go through these stages, making each one a determination to go through and focus, say, if one wants to go through the stages of rapture, pleasure, then experiencing the mental formation, tranquilizing the mental formation, one can go through it in that, taking that particular pattern. Again, if one has the mastery over it, one could instead take the pattern going through the mind, having the ability to keep the mind steadily on the breath. One can then shift it into the mode of begin with experiencing the mind, then just through a slight volition, bring gladness into the mind. When gladness arises, then one can then just concentrate the mind, and then through a slight volitional effort, liberate the mind from each obstacle along the way to deeper and deeper concentration. But in the initial stage, for practical purposes, I would say in our own personal training, the emphasis should be on the first tetrad. Okay.
I noticed that there's four groups of exactly the four bases of mindfulness.
Yeah.
From body, feeling, mind, to the mind factors.
Yeah.
The Dhamma.
Yeah.
Is it possible that the teaching is to tell us to use the breath be mindful and breathe first, and then make our mind more focused, and then shift the mindfulness towards these four places?
I would say so, but I say that because this is a mindfulness, it's an anapanasati, and so it's not simply beginning with mindfulness of breathing and then going into the four foundations of mindfulness and leaving the breath behind, but the in and out breathing always remains as you might call it the constant note accompanying the exercises through all of the four foundations of mindfulness. So one goes through all four foundations of mindfulness, but one is always mindful of the breath while going through them.
One of them has to be more prominent.
Yeah.
Either the breath or
yeah.
The other object.
Yeah, it would seem to me that as one goes into the other sections, say is rapture, if the feeling becomes more prominent, the rapture, pleasure, then there's still some background awareness of the breath, but the attention, sort of the focus of the attention, is now more on the feeling. Of course, now one is in the domain of contemplation of the feeling. Similarly, if one is putting the attention on the mind, there's still awareness of in and out breathing, but now one is either experiencing the mind to see, sort of examining and seeing what states are in the mind along with the in and out breathing, or one is gladdening the mind. when one is concentrating the mind, it would seem to concentrate the mind, one would be bringing the mind back to the focal point of mindfulness of breathing. And in liberating the mind, still keeping the mind focused upon that central point of in and out breathing, but one will now be attending to the act, volitional act of freeing the mind from the different obstacles one encounters.
The four groups of training, the first three sets are really the development of the samadhi. And the last one is really for the insight meditation.
Yeah.
Do you really need to reach the samadhi to continue the next one, the fourth one, or you can just...
Okay. The question is whether one really needs to develop samadhi to go into the section on vipassana meditation. If this is the question, is what degree of samadhi one needs to go into vipassana meditation? And there are many different opinions about this. There will be some who say samadhi is not necessary at all, you just begin directly with vipassana. There'll be some teachers who say you have to get jhana before you can do vipassana meditation. My view is that some samadhi is necessary for the vipassana knowledges to arise. But there are systems of meditation which are called vipassana, but what one is actually doing is developing mindfulness. One begins with mindfulness not aimed at developing jhana, but paying mindful attention to phenomena taking place in the present. As one does so continuously, particularly in like an intensive retreat situation, that constant arousing of mindfulness is bringing along the development of a samadhi. It's not a jhana samadhi, but it is samadhi in the sense of sustained attention to what is happening moment after moment after moment. And that samadhi is the basis for the arising of vipassana in the sense of insight knowledge. And so, coming to the case of mindfulness of breathing, what I would say is that one begins with attention to in and out breathing. One can develop the first two stages. Of course, one has to go through being mindful of knowing when one breathes in long, breathes out long, breathes in short, breathes out short. Then as the attention becomes better focused on the breathing, there will arise rapture and pleasure. Those states arise naturally. And one will also have to experience the mind to know how to deal with the mind in the course of one's practice. One wouldn't have to develop the mind to the state of a deep samadhi in the sense of a jhana. But once the mind gains the ability to remain consistently on the object and steadily upon the object, then I would say one can, if one has a skilled teacher, one could go into a method of practice that will bring one, I don't think one could go directly into contemplating impermanence, but one will start attending to phenomena occurring within the body, within the mind, in a way that will eventually bring one to the insight knowledge of impermanence. I think we have to stop now. It's gotten late already. Okay. we'll stop by dedicating the merit to the devas and other beings. And tonight I want to make a special dedication of merit. This very great Burmese monk who has been teaching in America for many years. He is also one of the co-authors of the Comprehensive Manual of Abhidhamma. His name is Venerable Usilananda. He's an old Dhamma friend of my own. Today in California, he underwent surgery for a brain tumor. And let us all dedicate the merit from this Dhamma discourse, listening to the Dhamma, dedicate the merit to him in the hope that he will have a successful recovery from this operation. Akasata ca bhumatha devanaga mahidika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakantu sasanam. Akasata ca bhumatha devanaga mahidika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakantu desanam. Akasata ca bhumatha devanaga mahidika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakantu mantaram. Etavata chamhehi sampadam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. Etavata chamhehi sampadam punya sampadam sabbe bhutanumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. Etavata chamhehi sampadam punya sampadam sabbe satanumodantu sabba sampati siddhya.